Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood. In theory. Okay. Well, in spirit. Anyhow, got a great show for everybody today. We're going to talk a little bit about services that could be offered, coaching services, and also 12-step types of offerings. But we'll start with the 12-step offerings, and we'll drift into individual and possibly group coaching activities. In this day and age, with healthcare the way it is, it's real important to be able to offer meaningful programming at all levels of service. And today, we're going to talk about things that could be offered in a sober living environment. And I want to be very clear the main distinction about a sober living environment. Sober living environment is not rehab per se. It's not inpatient therapy. It's not even intensive outpatient therapy. It's a level of service that's used usually after treatment, after the core, if you will, core treatment's completed. So the person transitions back into society. Now, I'm fully aware that it's interesting because the sober living environment sometimes is actually an easier access point into treatment than going to treatment. Okay. Why is that? Well, treatment can be pretty expensive. They build the insurance company, tens of thousands of dollars for 30 days or more, et cetera, et cetera. Sober living certainly can run that, but it can run way, way less. And so now that I am no longer in the inpatient and IOP sphere from yesteryear, I myself have been very interested in the provision of services of sober living environments. And obviously we, I've had some of the, folks from like Michael Snetzer in Frisco and Chris Wilson at ASIC in Fort Worth and others that offer fantastic sober living environments. So our guest today is Neil Williams, and Neil's been with us before, and Neil is continuing in growing his coaching practice and his offerings. And Neil, thanks for coming on the show again today, brother. Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Oh, man. Our pleasure. Suffice it to say, you and I won't get into it or try not to steal any of your thunder, but I really like the versatility that you bring into the space. I mean, you have a lot of your own personal experience, strength, and hope, and but also you're a credentialed certified professional coach. You have your CPC, and you're really doing some great work out there. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. So from your perspective, what would be one of the core activities you would think going into a sober living environment?
I like that we're talking about sober living environments and coaching because they kind of run side by side, as you were alluding to, I think. And one of the most important things and something I've done for years is bring a 12-step meeting into the sober living environment. I feel there's a lot of reasons if you want me to go into that, but
I do. Okay. I want you to go into that, and I want you to kind of educate our listeners, because some of our listeners, you hear about 12-step, you hear about what it is, but you really don't know what it is. And I think maybe you can describe it in a way in your own unique way that our listeners can benefit. So go ahead, knock it out. See what you got.
Sure. So the benefits of bringing a 12-step meeting into a sober, a more controlled facility is, you know, for one, you're encouraging these guys, men and women, you're encouraging these individuals to transition into a lifestyle where this is going to be a regular thing. And so you want them, for one, to get a taste of what an outside meeting looks like. And there are some things that are important. There, what a lot of people don't think about is if you go to a structured 12-step, an AA meeting, there are actually time lengths where each individual is asked to share. So they're asked to only share for 1 to 3 minutes and then to cut it off. A lot of times I'll go into these controlled environments and there's someone who will talk for 10, 15 minutes. And there's a lot of reasons you don't want to do this. One of the things that we focus on in recovery is, you know, steering away from a selfish mindset and being all self-absorbed and thinking about yourself. And this is one of those, just a very simple thing that we do in meetings that prevents people from getting stuck in self. You're just like everybody else. You get this amount of time to talk about you, and then it's someone else. We need to share this. This is everybody's place. We're all on common ground. We're all equals here. So little things like that. Another thing is it's also a comfortable space after each meeting. So what I'll do is I'll bring a 12-step meeting in. I'll chair the meeting. We'll go around and then we'll end it a little bit early so that there's some time for Q&A because a lot of
fellowship.
Right. And you have a lot of these folks who've never been to a meeting before. So you want to get them acclimated and you want them to be comfortable. So when they leave, they're not nervous going into this. They know what to expect. They know what to do. They understand the readings and how everything goes in the introduction to the meeting. So things like that.
So talk about the types of meetings. You have AA and NA, but you also have DAA, but talk about the variety there.
DAA. Okay, so there's AA, and I'll just name the ones I know of.
Sure.
There's
sure.
AA, there's NA, there's CA, which is Cocaine Anonymous. There's DAA, Drug Addicts Anonymous.
That's right.
And I know there's Gamblers Anonymous. There's probably something with pornography and sex addiction. I'm sure there is.
Oh, yeah, there is.
And there's Smokers. I think there's Smokers Anonymous, too, is there not?
Right.
The ones that center around recovery are your main ones are going to be your core group is like AA, NA, and DAA. You see some Cocaine Anonymous here and there. But you'll see more of DAA is still kind of on the up and come. And it's a good thing because I really like what they're doing. It's all inclusive. So whether it's alcohol, whether drugs or whatever, you're welcome. And it's solution based. When I say solution based, it's focusing not on the problems, but how to live. Addressing those problems. We're talking about the solution. We're not focused on complaining about our problems and how messed up our life is. We're talking about how it's getting better and what we're doing to improve. They're all 12-step focused. They're all based on the 12-step program.
Right. And it has their own traditions and rules and those things. And I like the DAA aspect. I like that. Particularly in a sober living environment where there's just different types of folks in the sober living environment. Mm-hmm. And the way I see this, for many sober living environments that are private pay or boutique, they're going to have everything in there. They're going to have alcoholics. They're going to have drug addicts. They're going to have NA people, but they're also going to have Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous people.
Yeah.
And SAA people. And so having a format for them as well. But getting back to what you're, you know, proposing here, now what's the distinction between an open meeting and a closed meeting?
An open meeting is a meeting that's open to people who feel like they have a problem, as well as those who don't. I think a lot of times people want to know what the meetings are about, whether they have a family member, a loved one, or if they're just interested. I know some folks who are going to school to become a counselor or a doctor, and which is one of the smartest moves I think a counselor or a doctor can make, is going to learn more about the program, as opposed to just going off the textbooks and what they tell you in the classroom. I think getting some real life experience is a good thing. Closed meetings is strictly for those who identify as an alcoholic, an addict, or whatever that meeting is for.
Right.
And there's a lot of meetings that I'm seeing as I travel and go to different ones. There's a lot of meetings that have every single meeting is an open meeting. And
wow.
I'm sure they have their reasons for doing that or not doing that. For me, after over 7 years of going to meetings, I don't feel any different, but you know, it's my life and I'm pretty open, but I think some people feel more comfortable sharing in a closed meeting and they don't want to talk about their problems as an addict or alcoholic around normal folks, because they feel like they might be looked down upon or something like that. So, you know, oftentimes they have closed meetings because they want their members to feel welcome and comfortable and sharing.
And the anonymity.
Yeah.
Sometimes they feel better about
it. Thing. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, well, good. I think that's an important aspect to bring in those meetings into the sober living environment and have, you know, depending on the cadre of folks that's in the sober living environment, having meetings to cater to those folks. But also, you know, I'm a proponent of, you know, going out to the community meetings and some of those are also very good, so that these folks interact with other people in the community. However, sometimes that first month coming from a structured inpatient treatment, it's better maybe just to chill at the house for a few weeks and get your stuff coming to you.
Yeah.
And have your programming coming to you, let you kind of settle in, you know, get your bearings and those things. I was going to fly this at you real quick. I had this after I read your sheet. What do you think about an open meeting? And it just depends. What about an open meeting at the sober living environment, but also kind of had family members there?
I think it's a healthy idea.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these places have, what did they call them? They have either, the one where I volunteered for some years had a parenting class.
Right.
And they would have counselors, significant others, and even parents. So they had a family day. I think it's a healthy thing because, well, from personal experience, my family, my dad, brother, aunts, uncles, they didn't really understand what they were dealing with, other than Neil's been crazy for a decade. We don't know what his deal is, you know. So introducing the family to the program, how it works and what you're addressing, I think is a really healthy thing, because you want them, if they want to be involved. Some don't have that I'll call it a luxury nowadays, because not everyone has a family that might be involved. So if you're blessed to have that, I think it's a healthy thing.
Yeah. And I think that, let's say I'm your other older brother or what have you, uncle or whatever. And I'm there and I go to this open meeting. And we're all in the open meeting, but this guy over here is talking about his addiction, his issues. So as your family member, I might be able to identify with this guy, or at least have sympathy and empathy or whatever for this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then go, oh, wow. And then you come back and say, yeah, man, like this and that for me too. And it's like, oh, okay. So sometimes it's easier for family members to kind of get out of certain forms of denial or whatever. Yeah. When they hear somewhere else, does that make sense? And so, so that they can get that kind of good vicarious learning from this other person's experience, and then like, okay, all right, you know, wow, you know, that I kind of get that now, or I can compare this guy's situation in a way to maybe yours, and kind of get some bearings that way. And it can also jumpstart, and otherwise it can jumpstart family therapy or family recovery coaching or whatever. It can jumpstart that in a subsequent way, because then that person would say, yeah, man, when I was in the meeting, you know, I heard this and it really impacted me and this and that and the other. So I just see it as a good thing. And again, completely voluntary. Nobody makes anybody do anything. You know, you come as you are. So it's a good thing. And also in the sober living environment, bringing the meeting into the sober living environment makes it a controlled environment. It makes it a safe group. It makes it a drug-free group. We don't always get that right. In a community, in the parking lot of the 24-hour
There's free coffee and air conditioning. So believe me, you're going to get some wild cards.
Right. Right, right. So, which reminds me, I got to work on my tobacco policy on this. just be puff bars only. But anyway, work on that tobacco policy. Good thing there. Okay, so we're moving off of that to now the step study classes. Now, step study classes can be didactic and teaching in nature if you have a lot of people in the room, but also it could be kind of coaching in a way. Mm-hmm. So talk about step study.
So there's so much more to the steps than a lot of people realize.
Right.
And I think it's a really healthy idea to have. So what we would do, and this is something that I've done for a couple of years now, we would, once a week, we would pick a step. So, of course, we'd go in order, chronological order, and then you just start back over. You know, generally, you have this 30 to 45-day window. So, you know, it's a revolving door, and I hope that doesn't sound insensitive. But these folks are coming into the facility, so you're going through the steps. What the step study class allows you to do is you have an hour, hour and a half, whatever it is, that you designate specifically on one step. And you're always going to have the other reason this is very good. And again, we're talking about coaching. You know, you get somebody. So let's say for me, you and I are both going through the steps.
Right.
Step one, two, and three for me were no big deal. And for me, step four is just, it really hits me. And I need some additional attention. I need some help understanding that. For you, you skate through it like it's nothing. But you're not everybody's the same, you know, and these are all individual experiences. And sometimes you need to be coached through that. And oftentimes it's healthy to do that in a group setting, because Bruce and Neil are in the same class. Bruce understands step four with no issues, and it's really been helpful to him. Neil is struggling and he's stuck. So having the coach or whoever's leading that group, as well as a peer who's going through it with you to help, that's extremely helpful. And then you're building. And again, you're back to that, the importance of fellowship and a controlled, safe environment. And you're being coached through this, and it really helps to have your peers next to you so you don't feel stupid, you know, because a lot of times you're worried about, am I the only one who doesn't get this? And that, again, is something unique that I get to bring to this, as I've been through this. And,
you know,
what were you going to say?
I was going to say that some of these folks that come out of 30-day programs, or they come out of treatment, and let's say they were doing some step study as part of their treatment. Man, some of these 30-day programs or 60-day programs, they're not even to step four, or they've done kind of a shit job of step four just to kind of check the box and get the fuck out of treatment. You know what I mean? Get discharged. So this is a way, I think, also in the sober living environment to get that continuity of care in the step study and kind of pick up where they left off, you know?
Yeah, and this is
build upon. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about the cost of treatment. It can get up there. Like, I think I found on the absolute lowest end, it's like 10 to 15 grand for 30 days. Mm-hmm. On the higher end, you're talking 80 plus, like no problem. I think 80 is what passions lists. So we can just imagine where it could go from there, the unlisted prices, you know, and that's just one facility. So where did I get lost? The importance.
You're on a roll, man. That was good, man. That was perfect.
The importance of when someone comes out of there, you don't know if they've been at this. Well, let's be generous and say they go to a $50,000, $60,000 facility, and unbeknownst to the family, your loved one has simply been given a packet for each step, which I have personally experienced. Okay, well, a coach can be anywhere from $2,500 to $6,000 a month, depending on how much attention you want that client to receive. Well, when I coach someone through step four, there's no packet. It's much more intensive, and I'm breaking this down and we're working through it together. I've lived it, and I've taken, I don't even know how many people through that step. And he's like, well, that's not what my packet said. Well, I bet it's not, because you know, the packet I saw didn't say any of that either. It said, tell me all the bad things you've ever done. Step four is an inventory. You list all your resentments. You list your fears. You talk about relationship. You talk about what you know what I'm saying?
I think I got an assignment for you, man. You need to make a packet.
packets.
So you make your own packet, man. And then I can bless and ordain it if they ever use it in the facility. Yeah. But no, I think
Hazleton,
you're right.
Hazleton, that's who has all the packets. Hazleton.
Yeah.
Look,
Hazleton's one of the GOATs, the original folks, and it's a great starting point, man. It really is. It's a good starting point. And you know, these programs sometimes and sponsors are only as good as the person giving you the service, you know what I mean? And not so much what's in the packet. But let's see here. And goodness. Everybody tries to call when you're on Zoom, you know what I mean? Anyway, good. So the step study is just another way to take the meeting experience and also their prior treatment experience to a new level that can also transform into a coaching relationship, which brings us to the next part. And I want to talk about sponsorship, but I also want to add the words mentor and I want to add the word coach. So okay. I'm going to put you on blast here and see how you do.
Yeah. it needs to be discussed.
No, yeah. But tell me some of your thoughts about the delineation. I'll talk about sponsorship first and then kind of get the hook greased a little bit. No, but when I'm talking about sponsorship, I mean, I'm talking about mainline, 12-step, you know, person's in AA. I'll become, or somebody will become, your AA sponsor. And we're going to go through that relationship under the guise, or not the guise, but under the rubric of I'm your sponsor. Mm. And as you know, man, some sponsors have different ways they do their sponsees and whatnot. So just real quick, because in a sober living environment, I'll get your word on that. I think you have to be kind of fluid. Here's what I mean. They take what you want, leave the rest or whatever. Some people might not be in the sponsorship frame, but they may be more in a frame for mentoring. They may not be, you know, or they, maybe they need coaching because they don't necessarily need a mentor. So kind of, if you would, kind of, what do you think some of the distinctions are between sponsorship, mentoring, and coaching?
Okay. With a sponsor, everybody needs a sponsor, period. You need a sponsor. I don't think there is any room for debate on that. It's how the program is built. It's what it's supposed to be. You need someone who's been through the steps and is living the program. I think that's essential. The problem becomes, specifically in a controlled environment like this, in my past, and I've experienced this, I had several individuals asking me to be their sponsor at one time. There's only so many hours in a day, and you also don't want to say no when someone's ready to ask for help. Sometimes you can say, hey, I've got someone who I really care about. I know him well. would you be open to asking them? Because I just don't have the time.
Right.
And sometimes it's just not going to work. They're like, no, I want you. Okay. I've worked steps 1 through 3 with 4 guys in the room at once.
Oh, wow. Sponsees or just in a class?
Sponsees. Because you're not getting too personal yet. You're not divulging anything too personal. And you're also getting them all started. So with a coach or a mentor, you would never do that. It would always be one-on-one, always. The other thing with sponsorship is this is volunteer. And this is not to say that any sponsor or sponsee doesn't care. I would never say that. There is a different type of investment when one is paying for it and one is receiving payment for services.
It's a professional relationship.
Because reality says I have bills and you have bills. Reality says you will pay those bills or you will live on the street and you won't eat. So you have to be realistic with your time frame. And that's part of why I started coaching, because I want to help more people. And if I'm to help more people, then the income needs to come from that in a way. But I'm going back to the differences, you know, mentorship. I don't think everybody's ready for a mentor. I don't think I was always ready for a mentor. If I wasn't doing the things I needed to be doing, if I hadn't already gone through the steps, if I hadn't already established some level of maturity and done some work, a mentor said, what am I going to do with this guy? He hadn't even gotten started yet. You know, a mentor is for someone who's ready to level up.
Well, yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Shows an element of surrender.
Right. Right. And I also feel like coaching, well, you coach someone who's on the team, right? So how do you get on the team? Get a sponsor and you get started. I mean, or you come willing, you know what I'm saying? Right. So these are different levels, and you get those folks who are like, oh, so you sponsor for money? You're a paid sponsor? Well, that's screwed up. Like, hold up. Because your sponsor, yes, as a sponsor, I answer calls in the middle of the night. Yes, I do things that are not in the – well, actually, in the book, it says you'll do a lot of things. Loaning money, bailing people out of jail, giving them a place to stay. You end up doing a lot of things. However, when you have a paid coach, there is a certain number of hours that you get no matter what. No matter what, for whatever it is we're talking about. And that's when you get into the stuff like fitness and health direction. You get calls with the family and in-person, individually devoted time frame. So that's the most broad, basic explanation. Does that help?
It helps, man. No, it helps. And, you know, there's another, you know, element, smart recovery and smart recovery meetings, which is a little bit different animal, obviously. I don't want to say it's the antithesis of 12 step, but it was born out that way. And so there's smart recovery meetings, and that's where, you know, maybe the coaching or possible mentorship creeps into that, to that paradigm. But anyhow, so good stuff there. Good stuff there. So now we're moving out of the kind of the 12 step realm and quote program realm into some other types of group coaching offerings that you might offer. Talk about the life skills.
Life skills, I think, is as simple. Simply put, when I think about myself and so many others, when we entered the program, everybody has a different starting point. You know, a lot of folks come off the street. You know, for me, before I was incarcerated, I was walking the streets. I slept in the bushes. I was carrying a firearm. I was messing with people who have no regard for human life. And now you're talking about making a transition, assuming you want the best and the most out of your recovery in your new life. You're talking about transitioning into a life of success and being a contributing member of society who not only contributes, but excels. And so to do that, you got to be healthy. You got to understand the importance of punctuality. You got to understand the importance of being presentable. You got to understand the importance of being professional when it's time to be professional. There's all sorts of stuff that as a career criminal, addict, alcoholic, you're not thinking about. And that stuff has to be addressed and discussed. Right. And it comes in so many different forms that how can you not have a class for that? So that's something I think is really important, the life skills training.
Well, right. And then there's kind of the 2.0 for the guy who's maybe middle-aged, was an absolute drop-dead success in their business ventures, in their ability to make money, or even organize teams and have very, very successful businesses. Some of the guys have a defect of character called narcissism that might be getting in the way of their life skills.
Yep.
And I'm talking about men here, folks. I'm talking about men in a sober living environment right now. Okay. So don't get the knives out yet. Don't get the knives sharpened yet. But for some of the guys, I want to say middle-aged guys, because there's a lot of middle-aged guys in treatment. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there in these treatment centers. It's the way it is. But taking that and that life balance, you know what I mean? I'm not talking about work-life balance, just that life balance, man. You know, guys are good at work, man.
Yeah.
That's where they get their self-esteem, their efficacy. I am absolutely guilty of that, hands down. Waving the white flag. I mean, I worked and worked and worked way too much and more than I should have, particularly years ago. Not so much now, but years ago. But anyway, so teaching that balance widening out their lives, doing things that are more other focused or family focused or things like that. So I'm. You know, I like what you're saying, Neil, but also really adding in that kind of empathy, other focused.
And I don't think, I don't think there's an, okay, maybe this isn't the right time to say this, but I got to be careful with how I say this, because there's a reason I became a coach, and a lot of it was because I knew it was my calling, but the other part of it was there was a lot of things that I felt I didn't get from sponsorship, and it's no fault of them. I don't blame my sponsor. I love my sponsor, and he's a close friend. But there's a, man, pivot points.
There you go.
And you have to have those. Okay, I'm a corporate killer. I'm a corporate shark. But what kind of father am I? What kind of husband am I? Just like you were saying, you know, you have to know when to pivot. You know, okay, family life and business life is just 100%. I'm a diabetic. Am I addressing my physical health? And pivot points. Like okay, I have all these things grounded, but I'm still unhappy and I find myself extremely irritable. What's your spiritual life? You know, how's your inner peace? You know, have you addressed any of those things?
There you go.
Pivot points. There's always something I've got to be working on. And you're exactly right. There's a lot of middle-aged men who they've been. That's so
another assignment, man. Pivot point. Packet.
Wait, I got it.
The PPP, baby. The pivot point packet.
Yeah, but you nailed it. Virtually every middle-aged guy who I meet in treatment, and I hate to label anybody, but it's very common to say, well, I haven't talked to my kids in 10 years. Right. I've heard that so many times, and it's heartbreaking because they are heartbroken talking about it, but they've also been a slave to this identity that they thought was real and this illusion that their addiction wasn't destroying everything outside of that and their job.
Yeah. You know, I want, it's the same story. I want to be a good provider. You get hooked into that. Self-efficacy at work, get hooked into that. Now you're neglecting your responsibilities, you're abdicating things. And then if you start using some addictions, whether it be porn, sex, or chemicals, booze, or drugs, and that's a wrap, man. You get wrapped up.
Yeah.
And then you just drown, drown in the addiction. But the addiction came later for some of these guys. Yeah. Came later. 30s, 40s. And that's a whole different kettle of fish, man. Than the young gun or whatever. Nothing wrong with the young gun, man. They got it done. You know what I mean? They got it done really. But
yeah, no,
the young guns recovery is a little bit, I don't want to say simpler, but kind of linear, like boom, 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 and hey, don't worry about it. You're still young, this and that. Well, it's a little bit interesting with the older folks. So anyhow, so great, man. Appreciate you covering your aspect on the life skills coaching and group coaching. And the other thing I want to let sober living environment, some of them kind of run with a 90-day commitment. Okay. So it's not, I was going to tell you that the revolving door isn't as fast.
That's even better.
Oh yeah. It's even better because that way the person, look, some people are going to roll out or they're going to abscond or whatever, AWOL or whatever, but the folks that stay, and I suspect moving forward with some things here that the stay will be 3 months. Now, some people say 3 to 6 months. Oof, that's an interesting, that would have to be reviewed by the team. And I don't know how I feel about 6 months, certainly the 3 month commitment is solid. All right. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to jump over health and fitness. While I think that's important, I want to hear from you about Bible study and spiritual guidance. So what are your thoughts about the provision and offering of Bible study and spiritual guidance inside of a sober living environment?
Everyone's not always going to be on board for that, but you often find when you break things down and you start, and this is my personal experience and many others, I've met guys that I've worked with who come into the program who are atheists, and they are no longer atheists after working with them and working the steps. It's a spiritual awakening. When you strip away all those things that you've been using to numb your problems and to fill the void inside of you, and this is what the program's designed to do. It's designed to reveal to you that you're lacking a spiritual life, that you're lacking a spiritual connection. And a lot of folks find that theirs then connects them or draws them towards a religion. And that's a healthy thing. There is nobody who tells you have to do that. But from my experience, there is a high percentage of folks who are then wanting that and they want to learn more about it. So yep. That's simply something that I have experience with. I have a good friend who's a pastor and he got me involved with his home church. And so I delivered some messages and I enjoy being a part of that. So I have experience with, and I enjoy helping guys with that if that's what they're looking for. But again, like I said, I've worked with guys who are atheists and there was zero pressure on them to change the way they believed. I just asked them to try some things and to just be open and to discover for themselves. They drew those conclusions on their own. Of course, with the help of some supernatural power that I don't possess. I'm the middleman. And, so I think it's a benefit to have a class like that and to have someone who knows what they're talking about. I by no means have attended seminary, but I've been around and I, I have enough education.
Yeah, you have. It's right there at Interstate 35 and Seminary. You know what I'm saying?
I may have attended some probation classes. I think my classes were right down the street.
There you go. Yeah, I've been on Seminary. Anyway, a little Fort Worth joke there. So sorry, everybody. Now let me go back to the old man executive version. You got guys that have been running a long time in their own strength. 20, 30, maybe more years in their own strength. They were their own higher power. You know what I'm saying? Because you know how I got this wealth? I did it. You see the name on that skyscraper? Yeah, that's my name. Okay. Anyway, that's not me.
Yeah. No.
Have I heard that in my Dallas office? Absolutely, brother. I've run into some guys. Woo. I mean, just getting them to believe about a higher power, just getting them to argue, like, what are the odds of all these random cells coming together to form a baby? You know, or to form you. And there's no architect behind that. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The absolute, it's like really, I have to strap in and reel in this. I mean, you know, it's interesting that, so I think that people may have come to the end of themselves chemically and said, you know what? Yeah. Can't use cocaine anymore. You know what? You know, sexual activities out of control. You know what I mean? You know what? My addiction. But sometimes they're not surrendering, you know, the bigger, more important side of the equation.
I think that's why it's very helpful for that to be optional. That's my opinion.
Oh yeah, it's optional.
But I agree with you.
So when you say spiritual guidance, did you mean something other? Did you have another thing there, or was that just?
I say God. I don't shy away from it. I say God all the time. But you know, everything, every religion we have here on earth is man, is translated by man, and ultimately is proclaimed by man. And none of us will truly know until we move to the next phase, you know, off this earth. So I leave every individual to make that decision for themselves. I just guide them and I answer questions when they want to ask them. When I get guys like that who look at what I've done, look at everything that I've done, me, I usually like to ask them why they chose to be in that place. If you, you know, crafted this wonderful, you know, very impressive resume in life, then why are you in this place? You know, why don't we just give something else a shot for a short period of time and see if it doesn't help? You know, live by somebody else's rules just in these ways for a period of time and see how it works out. That's it.
So yeah.
That works sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does.
Everybody has their own. Some people aren't ready.
No, yeah, no, it's fine. But yeah, but being there and giving people that option, And to do it in a way that's just real, God, I want to say practical, you know, just real practical, very, you know, personal, but not in a dogmatic kind of thing. But anyway, I'll be excited to see how some of that, you know, takes form. And again, a lot of these offerings, you know, the consumer of the offerings sets the tone for the group coaching or the individual coaching in that area, and where they are in their journey sets the tone where they are in their journey, where they are in that path sets the tone for subsequent work. So it isn't this kind of one size fits all cookie cutter. Okay, week number 2, point A. You know, I mean, we're not to do that. Yeah. All right. Now we got a few minutes left, only about 3 minutes. So you got to get health and fitness in there, man.
No problem. You know, we live, for those of us who come out of alcohol and drug addiction, a lot of times we've neglected our health. And so I think nutrition is just something that needs to be addressed. And when you're drinking heavy or using pizza rolls and ranch dressing at 3 a.m. is not a healthy diet. So you usually want to talk to guys about how they've been eating and think about that stuff. It's important for all of us to know. We only have one body, assuming that you believe that. We only have one of these for our time here, and we need to take care of it. And I think that's in direct relation to what the steps teach us, you know, daily maintenance, you know, being grateful and taking care of things. The other thing, fitness, there's a direct relation to the mental benefits from physical activity, depression, all sorts of stuff. And it also gets you out active, gets the blood flowing. If you come off drugs like cocaine and methamphetamine, your dopamine and serotonin needs to be encouraged as much as possible. That's going to happen from physical fitness. And it gets you social. It gets you out doing something and moving. Isolation is the last thing you want to do. Those are a couple of really big ones.
Yeah, it is a big one. And, you know, it can be something as simple as walking 20 minutes a day along with a good diet, or it can be some other things that you know about in terms of weight training and what have you else. That's an important part. And I think another thing as a dude, and I'm trying to lose weight now. I'm kind of in process, thank goodness.
But you look great.
Thanks, man. No, but as a dude, I would take a cooking class on meal prep. Like, yeah. I would do that. And I think some of these other guys in the sober living house would do that. Like, okay, we're going to do meal prep, right? And you take the stuff to work, because you know what? If you eat this and you walk for 20 minutes a day and you eat this and you stay hydrated and don't smoke, you're going to live probably 10, 15, 20 years young. A lot of guys are interested in not dying.
Yeah. But not only that, but the confidence. I'm thinking about this as we're talking about it. The confidence that a lot of us lack, especially when we're talking about men again. I know we didn't have the same issue, but as men, we don't feel too confident about ourselves when we come in all beat up, you know, and this kind of gets you some of that back, you know, getting some muscle mass. And the gym will not save your hairline. I'm sorry.
It won't save my wrinkle, my shark. Yeah, the wrinkle.
My brother is one of the fittest people I know, and he's got a receding hairline that started at age like 23. So
yeah, I hope he doesn't do this. Good. It's fun, but well, good. So that, you know, we got a minute left. So, man, thanks for coming on the show today, sharing your perspectives. I think you're spot on. And man, this is just the beginning. We'll bring you back again. And I think next week we got another individual coming on the show to talk about their perspectives on offerings that they would do with a heavy, heavy, heavy emphasis on group coaching and mentorship. Good. I mean, just unbelievable. It's like an anvil heavy. So I'm still trying to get my head around it. But anyway, no. Man, Neil, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
If you could tell our listeners how they you have a fantastic website and everything. How can folks reach you?
Yeah, please. My website is elevatedlifestyleacademy.com. On Instagram, it's elevatedlifestyle_academy. Check it out. Feel free to drop me a line if you want to know more. I'd love to hear from you guys. And thank you, Bruce, for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, man. Thanks for being on. And look at Neil's videos on Instagram and just doing some fantastic work out there, just coming out of the chute just marvelously. So we'll talk to you again. Well, folks, thanks for coming on the show today, or listening to the show, or watching it and or listening to it on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. We'll be back next week with a fantastic guest, and we'll pursue some of these things further, coaching and other types of programmings in sober living environments, which I think is a very helpful thing to society and an interesting segment to those of you that are coaches or want to become coaches. You can see us on our Facebook at Concierge Coaches Show. You can go to our Instagram on The Concierge Coaches, also on LinkedIn, The Concierge Coaches. And Justin will hopefully be back next week. He can be reached at nimmergood.com. And my website is conciergecoach.net. So again, everybody, have a blessed week. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you here next time on The Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to The Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.